Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Thousands have reported alien sightings over the years, but few have gained as much notoriety as this one. On the evening of November 30th, 1989, a housewife named Linda Napolitano would claim she was abducted by aliens from her 12th floor apartment in Lower Manhattan. And more recently, in 2024, Netflix released a three-part docuseries analyzing the evidence and the scrutiny regarding Linda's claims. So the question is, was this unbelievable event an elaborate hoax or proof of alien life? Today we are discussing the Manhattan alien abduction, also known as the Brooklyn Bridge incident. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Perplexity, a mystery podcast. As always, I'm your host, Kedra. If you're new to the show, hello and welcome. I tell tales every single week that have perplexed me, so if you love a good mystery that leaves you wanting more, don't worry, you're in the right place. If you end up enjoying today's episode, I'd love if you continue to follow along. If you are a returning listener, hi my friends, welcome back, super happy you're here. I have a great episode planned for you guys today. We haven't done an alien abduction in a while, so super pumped for this one, and I'm happy that I had my friend Sarge from Cryptid Cocktail Party with me to bring the vibes. I do want to issue a quick trigger warning for sexual assault in this episode. So listener discretion, all the sources will be down in the show notes. Very quickly, before we get into today's episode, I do want to say welcome to my newest patrons. This is a little bit delayed, so I apologize. I want to welcome Asclepius and Christopher. Asclepius, I hope I'm saying that right. I know that's not your real name, but that is your Patreon name, so I want to say it correctly. But these guys joined at the $5 tier, so they're going to unlock over 90 pieces of bonus content. I just recounted recently, so there's lots of stuff on there. They're also going to get early ad-free episodes. I sent out their welcome letters with stickers. It's really cool. There's lots of stuff going on over on Patreon. So if that interests you, you can always check out patreon.com/perplexitymysterypodcast. Right now, I am discussing the disappearance of the Death Valley Germans. That's the name of the case. But it's a family of four that vanished in Death Valley, and it's super creepy and unsettling. So if that interests you, there's always tons of stuff going on over on Patreon. Let's jump right in to the story of the Manhattan alien abduction, because this is crazy. So this is called the Manhattan alien abduction, or the abduction of Linda Napolitano.
I have never heard of this. This is amazing.
Okay, awesome. I'm excited. I hadn't heard of this either, but it's pretty famous in the UFO community because there are a lot of witnesses. And so that's always, you know, more compelling and interesting, but it's a crazy story.
An abduction in New York. I have to know how that went.
Yeah, exactly. And in Manhattan. Okay, so let's start first talking about Linda Napolitano. So Linda was Italian American, and she grew up.
You don't say.
Yeah, Napolitano. You couldn't tell. She grew up in Little Italy, and her father was a Golden Gloves boxer. Her mom was a stay-at-home mother, and Linda was actually an avid singer and actress when she was younger. She went by the stage name Lynn Long.
Okay. I guess this is like the time where people are trying to hide if they have an ethnic-sounding name.
That makes sense. Yeah.
My grandmother came over from Norway and would not teach my father Norwegian, would not let him reference cultural stuff. wanted him to be American. And so that was, it was like a weird time in our history. And now we're all trying to get back to that point. We're like, teach me Italian, teach me Norwegian.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, that's very true. This would be like an assimilation time. Yeah.
Yeah.
So at the time of Linda's alleged alien abduction, she was in her 40s and living in Manhattan. She was married to a guy named Steve, and as far as I know, they're still married because he gets interviewed in like a really recent docuseries and it still said like Linda's husband.
It's nice when abductions can bring a couple closer together.
Exactly. Instead of tear them apart, which we do have that in this story, yeah. But not with Linda and Steve.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. So they also had two sons, Stephen and John. John we'll talk about a decent amount more later also, because he gets involved in some of these encounters. So as of the documentary in 2024, they're still married, and there's a lot of like really interesting clips and videos, audio, because this UFO researcher gets involved. And so if anybody is curious to go watch this docuseries, I believe it's just called Manhattan Alien Abduction. It's on Netflix, but they show like a lot of clips and it's really crazy to see.
Very creative title.
Yeah.
Normally they have like, they have like a cool name to it, like the Travis Walton story, or this is just like Manhattan Alien Abduction. You'd think they'd give it like a funny name, like Famous Ray's Alien Abduction or something, you know?
They got to put you on the staff. You and I work for Netflix.
I'd be so bad at it.
Linda came from what she described as a paranormally sensitive bloodline as well.
Oh, God.
Her grandmother allegedly saw spirits throughout her life, and Linda believes this ability was passed down to her. So this will come up a lot, but basically from the time she was a kid, she would always say she saw what she thought were spirits. But then, like, after these things in her adulthood started happening to her, now she thinks that those were actually aliens.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, who am I to say? I don't know. I've never seen an alien, but maybe an alien just looks like a guy in Victorian clothes. Who knows?
I it's so hard because, like, you know, the classic story is the giant eyes, the bulbous head and things like right. that. But I mean, yeah, who am I to say what an alien actually looks like?
Exactly. What if, like, what if that's what they do look like, but they found a way to make themselves look like a normal person?
Exactly. Yeah.
Like in the movie They Live.
Oh,
Roddy Piper.
Okay,
so you got to watch it. He has these sunglasses, and when he puts them on, everybody who's normal around him actually is an alien.
Oh, wow.
It's a great movie. It's a terrible movie, actually. It's a terrible movie, but it's a great, terrible movie to watch, is what I'm saying. Louis Gossett Jr., Roddy Piper, amazing movie.
That sounds like a nightmare I had as a kid. Like, I literally thought, I literally thought my parents were aliens. Like, I walked downstairs in the dream and they had thought I had gone to sleep. And when I walked down there, they were like actually aliens, like beep, boop, up, up, like talking to each other.
Oh gosh, that is awesome. That's an amazing dream. That's such a good dream.
Pretty good.
Yeah. Like obviously a nightmare for a child, but as an adult, that's a great dream.
So Linda would recall on the night of November 30th, 1989, at around 3 a.m., three non-human beings entered her bedroom while she was sleeping. These creatures had diminutive large heads and enormous black eyes. She then was blinded by a bluish-white beam of light, and this light lifted her towards a reddish-orange spacecraft.
Okay.
The next thing she remembers is she was speeding off in this craft towards the Brooklyn Bridge. The creatures then, in a classic alien fashion, performed a variety of medical procedures on her for what felt like to her about 2 hours before bringing her back home.
Jeez.
She recalled one of the creatures coming at her with a needle as long as a turkey baster.
Ugh.
And
hopefully
that,
not as wide as a turkey baster.
Hopefully not. That detail also reminds me a lot of the Betty and Barney Hill abduction.
Yes.
That's a specific detail that Betty's crying about in the tapes is the really long needle going into her belly button, I think,
yep.
is what she says. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a big story around here because it happened maybe like, I don't know, 100 miles from where I am. So I've actually driven to that spot. I found it accidentally, actually. Where it happened is now a restaurant, and they want nothing to do with the story.
Really? Like,
there was a memorial there and everything, and they didn't want anything to do with it. So the gas station across the street in an epic, epic instance of trolling has this big mural on the wall of like an alien and like alien spaceships, and people get their picture taken there. I've had my picture taken there like twice, I think.
Wow.
But it's right across the street from where they were actually abducted. It's still super rural.
Yeah, I remember seeing pictures of it and I was like, oh, there's literally nothing out here. That's surprising. Yep. That the restaurant didn't want to get involved.
Yeah, I guess it was because you were getting a lot of like, you're getting like a lot of weirdos, a lot of locals that are, I mean, not non-locals who are like, they don't get the vibe. And so they're, you know, probably wearing their UFO t-shirts and going into this like fine dining establishment or whatever.
Sure. So as if this story that Linda was telling wasn't unbelievable enough, according to Linda, this was also not the first time something like this had happened to her. 13 years prior, she had what she thought was a dream while she was vacationing with her husband in the Catskills. In this dream, she was levitating and she felt that she had left her bed. When she woke up, she felt disoriented and she was outside in the grass. She also had a bloody nose, with blood coming out of just her right nostril.
Ugh.
She tried to shake this off, but this experience left her very spooked, obviously. Also, she kept noticing from there on out, her nose looked different. Like, I think in the documentary, they talk about she was getting pictures taken for something. Her nose was noticeably crooked in these pictures, and she was like, that's weird. My nose has never looked like that.
Oh.
So she goes and looks at her nose in the mirror, and there's like a noticeable lump near the bridge of her nose. And so she starts getting worried. She's like, what if this is like a tumor or something? And she'd never had any health issues before. So she's like, okay, I'm going to go get this looked at. I need to see what's going on. So she gets to a doctor pretty quickly, and they ended up doing an x-ray. Apparently, they found a small foreign object, and there are pictures of the x-rays shown in the docuseries. To me, it looks like this teeny tiny metal spring. I should have sent you a picture of it, but I didn't.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, I was just about to look at the pictures.
It's not in there, but it's basically like, it's clearly a human head in this x-ray, and then you see the nose and this little tiny, it looks like a metal spring, like a little twirly thing.
Like an antenna, maybe.
Yeah, essentially. And it's just sitting right in the nostril area.
Ah.
Doesn't look like it's too high up.
You'd think there'd be like a less obvious place to put something like that. Like, right? Obviously you're going to notice a lump on your face. You look at it all the time. But like, if you put it in like, you know, your back or something, like you'd never, like, these aliens, man, they got to figure their shit out. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Be more thoughtful with your placement.
Be a little more subtle.
Yeah. So they see this in the x-ray, but when they went to remove the object, it had mysteriously vanished. But there was a buildup of cartilage left behind, and the doctor told her she had very clearly had surgery there. There was like a surgical scar, but she claims she has never had any type of nasal surgery.
Whoa. And I feel like as someone who's had nasal surgery before, you know when you've had surgery in your nose. Like that,
yeah.
That is real rough. It hurts.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, being in like Manhattan, you know, plastic surgery, things like that, yeah. It's very, very common. But Linda took great pride in being like all natural, apparently.
Yeah.
And she was like, I've never had anything like that done.
And what kind of surgery do you get inside your nose?
True. Yeah, very true.
Oh, weird.
So Linda would end up sending these x-rays to a man that she had actually been writing letters to for quite some time. A guy named Bud Hopkins.
That sounds like a UFO guy name, for sure.
Yes, this is a pretty
like
well-known
name.
Guy. Yeah, and he honestly, he seems like a good dude throughout this.
Okay.
Like, keep that in mind as we talk about him. So,
okay, good.
Paranormal and UFO researcher, and he was pretty well-known because he would go do talks everywhere. He went on like really big talk shows too, like he's been on Oprah and stuff like that.
Is he part of MUFON?
I don't know. He seems like independent.
Okay.
He's not alive anymore. He died in, I think, 2011, but he seemed like super hardworking, like boots on the ground, driving places and just like recording and doing stuff all the time. But
okay.
Linda actually had written Bud around April before her alleged alien encounter in November, because she had been reading one of his books, is my understanding, and realized that it sounded like what may have happened to her in the Catskills, and then it's also making her think about things in childhood.
Okay.
And between April and November, she had also been regularly meeting with Bud, because he ran this, like, UFO support group out of his apartment.
Just, like, baking cookies so they can talk about their abduction experiences.
Yeah, and they were doing a lot of hypnosis as well. Okay. That was kind of Bud's thing, is he believed, and obviously hypnosis is very controversial, but he believed that he could potentially unlock some of these memories from people by doing hypnosis, and he would like record the sessions with the person's permission. He was also married, and his wife had a background as a documentarian, and so she found all of this pretty fascinating. She was more like, she wasn't super into UFOs like Bud was, but she was like a supportive wife and wanted to give him like benefit of a doubt and just thought it was really interesting. So she would like record stuff all the time. So there's a lot of footage, which I also think is really cool.
Yeah, it's good that they record it, because I think it kind of adds legitimacy. It's not like he can make something up afterwards. And with hypnosis, I think they use that on Barney Hill, because he had really suppressed everything from the abduction. And then after hypnosis, it really kind of opened the floodgates.
Yeah, they did use it on Barney, because I covered that story not too long ago, and I very vividly remember the first time I heard his hypnosis tape where he's like screaming.
Yeah.
It gave me
it's
chills.
Disturbing.
It's very so disturbing. Disturbing. Yeah. So Bud believes that aliens were surveying us, tracking us, and abducting human beings and implanting tracking devices, similar to what humans do to animals. So when he hears Linda's story, he's obviously like, okay, this is super compelling. This is crazy. We've got to like talk to this lady, get it on camera. And Linda had a background as a singer and actress. She's attractive. She is really great on camera. And so he obviously is like, okay, this is going to be really good for us, because, and I think this is kind of the way I interpreted it. There's kind of this stereotype in the UFO community of like looking a certain way.
Yeah. Yeah. Like bumpkins that just, you know, they look like they've like 10 miles of bad road. I get it. I love the idea of aliens like just abducting a socialite and tagging her like a shark to track her movement.
Exactly. And it's like, it's shitty to think about it that way, but it's like with the attractive thing, but it's I get it of, okay, this could make us look a little bit more credible, I guess.
Yeah, it adds some legitimacy to it, because it's bucking the trend of weird hillbilly getting abducted.
Yeah. And like Manhattan mom of two gets abducted. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a more relatable story, because, you know, normally when somebody gets abducted, you're just wondering if they're having a bad reaction to the meth they made at Walmart parking lot.
Yes. So Bud ended up calling the hospital that Linda went to get those x-rays done. And you have like in the docuseries, his wife is recording him talking on the phone. You don't actually hear who he's talking to, but he allegedly was talking to the hospital and is somehow able to verify that Linda did in fact go to this hospital. There was a foreign body found in her nose in the x-ray, but then like it wasn't there when they tried to pull it out. Yeah,
wow.
I mean, it's pretty compelling.
That's more steps than a lot of investigators take.
Right. And I mean, that's how he was. And that was something that his wife always admired, despite her being a lot more skeptical, is that he was really active in making sure that he would like really thoroughly check these claims before just saying, you know, hey, this is like, he was very objective.
That's good, because it can be tough, especially when you spend so much time on something. Like, you don't know if you're just confirming your bias or if you're actually coming up with like some good stuff. So it's good that he was like, at least willing to do the research and talk to the hospital. I'm surprised the hospital talked to him.
Well, like that, yes. And I work in a hospital. And so when I heard this, I'm like, I feel like the only, I mean, I don't know what the rules were back then, but I feel like the only way that would happen is if she signed a medical release or something. But even then, normally you would have to go, at least nowadays, you have to go in person, or there's like a HIPAA secured way to do that. I don't feel like a phone call is very secure. So I don't know. I was immediately like question mark about that, but they do play a clip in the documentary of him on the phone with someone.
All right. Well, I mean, maybe she has a good relationship with a doctor.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, now that I think about it, that would make sense, because I think one of the sources I read said that she knew the doctor personally. So that would actually, that might bend the rules a little bit. One of the most significant details in this case is Linda's abduction had a very high number of witnesses. Bud claims that after investigating the encounter, he managed to track down 23 witnesses from that night, who either saw like really bright lights or strange objects in the same area where she was abducted, or literally saw her floating out of her apartment into a spacecraft.
Wow.
Yeah. I've never heard of anything like that.
I don't want to get too in the weeds here, but I'm having flashbacks to Ghostbusters 2 when the baby gets abducted and is floating out over the city.
It's a similar vibe.
Yeah, imagine seeing like a full-grown woman just being floated out of her apartment window.
Yeah,
like, and you, how do you square that?
Well, and some people really couldn't. It seems like it drove some people to madness, which we'll talk about. And then there was one person who I remember saying they thought like a movie was being filmed because it looked like special effects they saw.
Wow. When was this?
Oh, no, you're fine. 1989.
Wow, that's so weird.
So Linda would say to Vanity Fair in 2013, quote, "If I was hallucinating, then the witnesses saw my hallucination. And that sounds crazier than the whole abduction phenomenon."
No, that's fair.
So let's talk about these witnesses. Keeping in mind that this all comes from one source, Bud Hopkins, but there are video interviews with these people.
Okay.
So he does use pseudonyms, is my understanding, but that's the other thing, is like a lot of these people don't want to identify themselves. So there's some skepticism with that, but at the same time, I can understand why someone wouldn't want to identify.
I mean, there's good reason to be skeptical either way. Like, yeah. If you're a skeptical person and you don't want this to be true, or you think all of this is nonsense, if they use their names, they're trying to get famous. If they're not using their names, it's because they're not real people.
Very true. One witness was, again, pseudonyms, but a woman named Janet Kimball, who was driving into Manhattan, and she was on the Brooklyn Bridge coming back from a party late at night. Keep in mind, Linda was abducted at like 3 a.m., so it's really late.
Oh, okay.
She would later tell Hopkins that suddenly her car, along with several others, stalled out. She started shouting, and other people are yelling, honking their horns, "Hey, what's going on?" And then the next thing she knew, there was this super bright light right by that area where Linda was taken, and she thought a movie was being filmed. Another man on the Brooklyn Bridge, who was interviewed in the docuseries, also claims he saw the same thing. He describes it very similarly. And his car also stalled out, and he saw a woman in a white gown floating in the sky.
Jesus.
Then there was Kathy Turner, a middle-aged bookkeeper living in Brooklyn. She saw a UFO that night that allegedly matched the description of three other witnesses. It was hovering around Linda's building and was oval in shape. Her nephew, Frank Turner, corroborates Kathy's claims, saying he heard the story from Kathy herself. So basically, another thing that Bud would always do is he would interview these people separately to try to make sure their stories matched. And he's recording all of it so then they could like match up the points. And to him and to his wife, their stories were matching up, sometimes nearly identically.
I like Bud a lot. This is more skepticism than you get from like sometimes the skeptics, you know?
Exactly. No, I really do. I like Bud too. The next witness is Francesca, who used to live in Linda's building, like when this happened. So she was on the fourth floor. Linda was on the 12th floor. She saw a really bright light flooding the courtyard area, and she said the light was so eerie and scary that she didn't want to look at it.
Oh.
she woke up her husband because she was so terrified. But she had never told anyone about this except her husband until like 6 years later when her and Linda, I don't know if she was still living in the building, it's kind of confusing, but her, Linda, and like another neighbor got together in Linda's apartment for drinks on Easter Sunday, and they just start talking about the paranormal. And Linda started talking to Francesca about her abduction. They're kind of like lining up times, and so Francesca's like, wait a minute, when was this? And she started to wonder if the light she had seen could have been significant to what happened to Linda.
I feel like that's another layer of believability, is that like it took 6 years for this conversation to happen. Like they were just, nobody wanted to talk about it.
Yeah, there's a lot of like different ways you can look at it from the skepticist's point of view. And I think I bring this up later, but I could just say it now. A lot of these witnesses, my understanding is they came forward after Linda's story was public.
Okay.
So it's also questionable of like, were they trying to appease Bud, or like who's to say what is actually true? So it's hard, but
yeah,
I could also see that point of view also.
That this like doesn't scream fake to me. Sometimes we hear stories on Cryptid Cocktail Party and I'm like, come on, there's no way. But this seems pretty good. And it's almost like a true crime thing. Like the witnesses are just coming out as they hear about the story.
Well, it's funny you say that, because the story is about to take a crazy turn and it does go into true crime, in my opinion.
Oh, I'm so excited.
So the next two witnesses were Richard and Dan, and they were NYPD. They were parked under a highway that runs along the east of Manhattan, FDR Drive, facing Linda's building. We find out about these witnesses because Linda called Bud Hopkins and said, hey, these two cops just showed up to my door, and they identified themselves as Richard and Dan. And basically, she says that Richard was always, because she ends up interacting with them multiple times, Richard was always super friendly. Dan was always kind of standoffish and seemed like irritated. Dan always kind of scared her. So they show up at this initial time to her door wanting to talk to her because they had seen what happened that night and they wanted to basically question her. They showed badges and she thought that she could get in trouble if she didn't allow them to come into her apartment. Linda says that they're trying to get information out of her, and she ends up getting so frightened that she asked them to leave the apartment, and then she called Bud right after. So Bud's like, come on over, tell me everything, yeah. And they, you know, record it. Allegedly, Richard and Dan would also later write a letter to Bud Hopkins, and they would also later send audio recordings of their recollection of that night. That's the other interesting thing, is they play audio throughout the documentary of like all these different voices, like different and, you know, videos of different people. So if this is a hoax, it's insanely elaborate.
Yeah, this is a lot.
Yeah.
Like to have all this evidence, the letters, the audio, like that's a lot of work.
Right. Richard and Dan would also later admit that they were actually not NYPD. They were federal agents. That night, they were not on patrol. They had been guarding a former UN Secretary General, Javier Perez de Cuellar.
What the hell? Normally, you fake it upward, you know? Like a federal agent pretending to be a city cop.
Yeah, their story kept changing, and just it gets more and more elaborate, where you're like, what the hell is going on? So, allegedly, they were part of a group coming late at night from the heliport on Governor's Island, and with them in other cars were two unarmed U.S. government officials and two foreign statesmen, along with guards of their own. Richard and Dan would claim that they and Perez de Cuellar all witnessed Linda's abduction that night.
Wow.
Richard claimed to have seen a craft with a rectangular-shaped window and green rotating lights hovering outside of the building where Linda was. He then got a pair of binoculars and examined the object further, claiming he saw three hideous creatures inside that were not human, with disproportionately large heads, no hair, and large eyes. Then these creatures escorted Linda into their craft, and this is where the story gets even more fucking insane. This is like when I started rereading things. Like, what did I just read? Did I read that right?
Did I put that word in there in my head, or is that really in there?
Linda starts telling Bud that she is feeling really paranoid and she feels like people are watching her. And it gets to the point that Bud is so worried about her that he asks her to wear a wire. And they're like audio recording stuff. Because everywhere she goes, she feels like she's being followed. She ended up borrowing a gun from a friend and like carrying it around with her.
Back when you could do that in New York City. Call up a friend, can I borrow your gun for a week?
We can still do that in good old Texas. So she, you know, shares this concern and Bud's taking it really seriously. And he's checking in with her multiple times a day, is my understanding. Then one day, while Linda was walking around outside, she noticed a black car. Richard and Dan were standing outside of it. My understanding is Richard tries to get her into the car. He's like, hey, can we talk? Let's drive around, blah, blah, blah. She said she didn't want to go in the car. And the next thing she knew, she was being forcibly grabbed and forced into this car.
What?
And there is audio of this because she was wired.
Yeah.
Yeah. They claimed that they felt the need to be near Linda and to prove what they had seen was real. According to Linda, Dan started calling her a half-breed, and you do, I believe, hear this in the audio, insinuating she was half-human and half-alien. Then they made her take off her shoes, and she would later say... she would later say she thinks they did this to see how many toes she had.
This is turning very much into a Quentin Tarantino film.
Exactly.
Some feet involved now.
This is when I kept rereading. I was like, sorry, come again? What the fuck?
I love that their only method of checking if she was an alien is, does she have 10 toes? Yeah, if there's 11, she's an alien.
I imagine it was something like, how do we know? I don't know. What do aliens have? I don't know. Check her toes, man. I don't know. What's going to not get us in trouble, you know?
So weird.
So weird. So at this point, Linda pulls out her gun.
Yep.
And she threatens the men, saying, pull over or I'm going to shoot. They pull over and she runs away. And then she immediately called Bud. And again, there's audio of this that they play. And he's like, oh my gosh, this is so crazy. Like, Linda, come to the house right away. Come straight here. At a later point, Dan also a second time would kidnap Linda.
God damn it.
And try to rape her.
What?
But Richard showed up just in time to stop him.
What the fuck is going on?
I'm sorry, I shouldn't be laughing. Just, it's crazy.
This is nuts.
In another version of events, Linda, Dan, and Richard had all been abducted by aliens the night that Linda was taken. So they were all taken.
Oh my God.
Dan wrote to Hopkins saying the aliens had telepathically identified Linda to him as the Lady of the Sands. Whatever that means.
The Lady of the Sands, like Staten Island? What sands are we talking about?
I don't know. It's clear that they thought she was like offering something significant to humanity though, and that they thought she was not fully human.
Oh man, that's so fucking weird.
Richard also claims he saw the aliens processing sand samples when he was abducted, and they somehow got some of the sand. Richard brought it back home with him. When they examined it with an electron microscope, it allegedly showed abnormalities.
Why isn't this a bigger story? I feel like I should have heard all about this.
I know. Yeah. Well, and also, like, I don't know where this sand is or if it was ever actually... Right. You know, but it's, yeah, there's so many crazy details.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Richard also went on to recall a lifetime of abductions and told Hopkins he and Linda had been abducted together many times from the time they were children. When they were abducted, they formed a secret romantic relationship, and Richard was also convinced he was the real father of Linda's youngest child.
Wow. This is fucking crazy.
This is like an alien soap opera.
It really is. This is stuff you expect to hear from like a trailer park abduction. You know what I mean? This is nuts.
Manhattan.
Yeah.
And this is interesting because Linda in the docuseries, you know, talks about how she saw spirits from the time she was a child. So she's saying she's seen these things since childhood. Richard's saying they've been abducted together throughout childhood. Then there was this other witness, again, pseudonym, but Marilyn Kilmer, who was allegedly abducted on a separate occasion along with Linda and de Cuellar, the UN Secretary General.
All right, we need to stop hanging out with Linda. Move out of New York. Linda is, she's a Jonah. She's bad news.
Bad news. Get out of there.
Yeah, I don't want to hang out with Linda at all.
In this abduction was also Linda's younger son, Johnny. Allegedly, Marilyn identified de Cuellar from a photograph lineup, but he's also like a famous UN Secretary General, so right. I don't know if that's significant. Like I said at the beginning, Bud Hopkins also ran this support group for UFO abductees, and some of these abductees are interviewed throughout, and they're doing hypnosis. And one of the things that Bud's wife, Carol Rain, started noticing about Linda is that she didn't act the same as the other people did under hypnosis. When he would do hypnosis on these other abductees, it's almost like they were drunk. Like their speech would kind of slur and they're talking really soft. They're in like a dreamlike state, yeah, basically. And Linda had this very clear, eloquent narrative. Over time, Carol said she didn't believe Linda. It was one thing after another. The story kept getting more and more crazy.
Well, some people are impervious to being hypnotized.
Mm-hmm.
And so that made me think when you said she was different, that made me think maybe she's like, she couldn't get under. So she's like, okay, now's my time to shine and just tell whatever story I want.
Well, and maybe she's different because she's not fully human.
That could be it too.
Who am I to say?
I mean, at this point, that feels like a very distinct possibility.
At this point in the story, it is not out of the realm of possibility because so many other crazy fucking things have happened.
Dude, this is fucking nuts. This story is ridiculous. I'm thinking we're just going to get a traditional copy-paste abduction story. Instead, we've got General Hospital in space.
Well, and that's why I don't cover a ton of alien abductions, to be honest, or like UFO sightings, because a lot of them are like, we saw some lights.
Yeah, we saw some lights in the sky, or like a round object.
This is insane.
This is nuts.
Bud would later write a book, of course, about Linda's story in 97, called Witnessed, The True Story of the Brooklyn Bridge Abduction. At the time, he gave Linda a pseudonym, Linda Cortile. And again, getting rid of that Italian name.
Bud is secretly racist against Italians.
And a lot of the narrative that Hopkins writes throughout it is information he gathered from Linda's hypnosis.
Okay.
Linda continued to report being followed and tormented by aliens throughout her life, saying they targeted her family and gave them nosebleeds. The details of this are murky in the documentary. They just say early in the summer, but I think this would have been like in the 90s. Basically, Linda says she was sleeping and she suddenly got the sensation that she was being choked. She got up and went down into the hall and found the whole family standing up in the living room with nosebleeds, all bleeding from their right nostril, just like what happened to her in the Catskills.
This is so creepy. I'm starting to wonder if your parents really aren't aliens at this point. Because the dream happened.
Her parents? Oh, my parents.
Yeah. Because your dream, like Linda's dream happened and then she was getting abducted by aliens all the time. Maybe. Something to think about.
Maybe. I hope that doesn't happen to me.
You've got to sneak up on your parents. Make them take off their shoes.
Good thinking. Yeah. Socks. Shoes and socks off right now.
Let's go. Right now.
Now I'm trying to think the last time I saw my parents' feet.
There you go.
You might be onto something.
I planted the seed of doubt.
Additionally, 9-year-old John, one of Linda's sons, was interviewed by Bud Hopkins shortly after this event with the family in the living room. and John would claim he remembered being in a white room with two very mean and tall men. He was also interviewed in the docuseries as an adult, but he didn't want his face to be shown.
Yeah.
So it's just blacked out. In this version, he says he remembers the night, but he saw three beings in the living room. And they don't say anything about this in the docuseries, but I did notice that. Like, initially he said two as a child, now he's saying three, but I don't know. I just thought that was interesting. He said his mom wasn't moving or responding to him, despite him screaming while he was being abducted. He's, like, screaming as loud as he can, and it's like Linda was and wasn't there. It's like it was just an image of her. He also claims that he continued to have nightmares throughout his childhood, and looking back, he thinks he could have possibly been abducted as early as the age of six. And when he told his mom about this, she told him what was happening to him was probably real.
Helpful. Thanks, Mom. Are you fucking kidding?
Yeah, there's a lot of controversy about Linda and how she dealt with John, like her telling him all of that. But I don't know. Like, what do you say?
I mean, you don't tell your kid that the horrible experience they had was, yeah, it was real. That really happened. We were abducted by aliens. Go tell everyone you know about it. Like,
I don't know.
I feel like I put my kid in therapy or something.
No, for sure. And he does say in the docuseries that he has had a lot of therapy. He, like, references how helpful that has been in his life and talks about his therapist multiple times. Linda was also experiencing a lot of paranoia throughout this whole thing. Like, she talks about how every night she would keep a stun gun by her bed and she would, like, check the curtains and the doors and the windows. And I don't know how her husband felt about this is the other thing I'm wondering.
I feel like he's probably not a big fan. He's a saint for staying with her, that's for sure.
He seems really nice in the docuseries. They don't interview him a lot, but he's just like, yeah, it was pretty crazy. And it also seems like he verifies the living room incident. Like, he remembers waking up in, like, a trance.
Oh, weird.
Again, if this is a hoax, it's super, super elaborate.
Yeah. And also, like, you never think of abductions in a big urban center like this. So it adds another layer of weird because, like, in a rural area, like, everything you hear kind of makes sense. Like, nobody else saw it. Nobody knew anything. This happened in the middle of, like, one of the busiest cities in the world. Even in 1989, everybody's awake at 3 a.m.
Mm-hmm. Very true. So that's, like, the narrative of the story. We're going to get into, like, controversy around the case next, but what do you think so far?
This is insane. You've blown my mind. This is a crazy story.
So obviously a big thing that always comes up with skepticism in UFO cases is, oh, they did this for fame.
Right.
Linda Napolitano's abduction became highly publicized thanks to Bud Hopkins. Bud and Linda did go on dozens of talk shows afterwards. They spoke at conferences. And Bud would later go on to write his book, which my understanding is his book was pretty successful.
Yeah.
Another big area of skepticism is the witnesses. They were never named. And we kind of talked about that already of, like, well, they could also not be named because they don't want to be identified. It's embarrassing. But there's always some skepticism with that. And some people see Bud as potentially being biased because he believes in UFOs. He's a UFO researcher. And he's really, like, the only source we have for, like, gathering these witnesses.
You're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't in that situation, though. Like, everybody's going to think that you're biased because you're a UFO researcher.
That's very true. Additionally, UN Secretary General Perez de Cuellar has since refuted any affiliation with Linda's abduction. He had to release a formal statement with PBS saying these allegations are ridiculous and completely false.
I love that PBS got involved for no reason.
Right? I love the idea of a UN official having to be like, guys, can we actually talk about real issues in the world? Stop asking me if I was abducted in Manhattan. Bud Hopkins, now ex-wife, has also highly criticized the case. So this is what I was talking about in the beginning of a marriage did fall apart because of this.
Poor Bud.
It's sad. Yeah.
This like nice guy. Like, I just looked at his picture. He looks like the sweetest dude.
He really does. And Carol's really pretty, too. She's the one holding the camera. I labeled it for you.
Wait. Oh, okay. Okay.
It's like now short, short red hair. Yep. Yeah.
Looks a little bit like Beverly D'Angelo.
Yes.
With like curly red hair.
What Carol says now is she believes this was nothing more than, though very elaborate, a hoax, and that her ex-husband, quote, cherry-picked compelling details, but ignored anything that presented difficult questions. So basically, she says that over time, he lost his objectivity. He became so obsessed with Linda and Linda's story that he was too far in. He had to believe it, whether it was true or not.
Gotcha. I mean, I'm pretty skeptical most of the time, and I'm having a hard time believing the story.
Same. No, same. It's a lot to buy into. Yeah. And I mean, if you're this far in, you believe either all of it or none of it, in my opinion.
Right.
If you're in his situation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know.
For me, I'm like, I could see some of this being true. Like, maybe she has actually been abducted before, but I'm having a really hard time believing all of this, you know?
Yeah. Well, if you look at the Betty and Barney Hill situation, it's very similar in that she really started to jump the shark near the end, make stuff up and tell kind of all kinds of crazy stories. It's almost like maybe she was afraid to lose, you know, she'd lose her relevance.
Yeah, a lot of people have said that with Linda, of like, it seems like it could have been true in the beginning, and then she just wanted to stay relevant, so she kept adding things.
Right.
With Betty and Barney Hill, I've always found that story to be more believable because of the star map that Betty drew. That's like one thing that I will never get over in that case. Statisticians have looked at that and been like, no, it's like basically impossible that she got all these points correct.
Right.
Yeah.
And also the Barney's reticence to get involved. Like, he did not want to be a part of it and just kind of was grudgingly dragged along by Betty.
Totally. Ultimately, throughout this whole process, Carol started to resent Bud.
Yeah.
I mean, he's spending a lot of time and attention with this attractive woman, and he does also, big mistake, Bud also calls Linda attractive, like, to Carol. Like,
it's a problem.
I met this woman, and she has this crazy story, and it's so crazy, and also she's attractive. Like, no.
I mean, Bud, you get points for the honesty, but you get an F in common sense.
Exactly, yeah. We were rooting for you, Bud.
Yeah.
She also ended up publishing an essay about all of her findings online. So basically, she starts, like, reviewing all of this footage and building a case against Linda.
Right.
And she came to Bud and was like, hey, these are these things that I'm seeing, which we're going to talk about in a second. But she builds a pretty compelling case, and Bud is just not listening to her. And so she publishes this essay.
Oh.
Regarding the witnesses, Carol has said, Kathy Turner was an elderly woman whose eyesight was failing her. So she wouldn't have been able to accurately say what she actually saw that night.
Yeah, but was it, that was 6 years before she actually talked to Linda about it.
There were multiple witnesses. Was Kathy the one? No, Francesca was the one that talked. Okay, yeah, so this is a different lady. Francesca, the woman who saw the bright light in the courtyard, also said she was too terrified to open the curtains. So it's like not necessarily something super significant. She just says she saw a bright light through the curtains and was scared. Like, Carol has seen some skepticism with that because she didn't actually open the curtains and see anything.
Gotcha. You know? But Francesca lives in New York. Like, you know what lights are normal and what lights aren't normal. And if you see a light that scares you in New York City in the dark, it's got to be a pretty friggin' scary light.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I still, and like, I say this as someone who is skeptical, but still very open to the idea of aliens because like, the universe is so vast. Like, who am I to say? I think there could be so many. I think there's like multiple things out there that we don't even know about, you know, like beings and stuff. I'm not saying that something didn't happen on November 30th. I think it's like definitely possible. And it would be pretty crazy to bring 23 people together to say, hey, you want to like make up this story? Like, it just
that
doesn't cost
a lot of money, I feel like.
Yeah. And like, these witnesses, I don't think they're getting anything out of it. You know, it's not like they were the ones publishing the book and going on the talk shows.
They're all going by pseudonyms.
Yeah, very true. Another criticism is the hypnosis. Hypnosis has been criticized by experts in the psychology community 10 times over. It is a controversial tool. From what I've gathered, Bud was not an expert in doing this.
Self-taught. Right.
Self-taught. He would do things like read letters from the witnesses to Linda while she was under hypnosis.
Oh, that's not good. And if Linda's faking the hypnosis, or, you know, she's an alien being who is impervious to it, then...
I love that we're bringing that in as a possible...
I can't write it off at this point.
Can't write it off.
I'm in too deep.
So, yeah, so to me, this like immediately muddies the waters because it increases the chances of coercion, false memories, all kinds of stuff. So many people who have studied Bud Hopkins' recordings and methods have found his questions to be very leading as well. However, it is interesting in the documentary, as skeptical and spiteful, understandably, as Carol is about this whole situation, she did admit that when Bud first started doing hypnosis, like way back when, she was so curious about it that she went under hypnosis with him. And she claims that through this, she recovered a lot of traumatic childhood memories and it helped her process them. So she says, like, for her, she was a believer in Bud's hypnosis because it worked for her.
Yeah.
The letters that have been submitted to Hopkins, the ones from like Dan and Richard, I think other people wrote letters too, but these letters have also been under scrutiny. In the docuseries, Carol says she believes Linda wrote the letters, all of them, because all of these letters are typed.
Yeah, that's weird. That's weird.
It was like they were clearly written on a typewriter. One letter, which allegedly came from Perez de Cuellar, the UN secretary, has a signature at the bottom. And so Carol got a copy of this. I don't know exactly how she did this, but basically she found this government, like I think it was public record, this thing that he had signed, and she got a transparency of it. The signature perfectly lays over the signature on this letter. So it's like it was forged.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because, you know, your signature is never the same.
Yeah, it was exactly the same. And they show this in the documentary and you're like, oh, yeah, that's a forge.
That's no good.
Then there's the X-ray. The foreign body in her nose. Carol says you could get this same effect, and she does test this, by taping something to the side of your nose and getting an X-ray. And this doctor was, I believe, Linda's niece. It's very questionable, you know.
Oh, damn it, Linda. Yeah.
Damn it, Linda.
Damn it, Linda.
Or perhaps she stuck it up her nose because, like, it was not that far up. It's like literally, it looks like it's right here.
Okay.
Another big thing for me is, why didn't Linda report her kidnapping to the authorities? Why did she go straight to Bud Hopkins? And I mean, I know that that's controversial. Because, you know, when women report things, doesn't always happen.
Yeah, it doesn't always get believed, right?
I think it's odd that every step of the way she went straight to Bud. Like, she never talked to anyone else outside of her family and Bud.
And Bud has never seen the two cops, right? Or has he?
No.
And has Bud seen, so Bud's interviewed these witnesses, but he never met the two cops.
He never met them and he only heard them on audio.
Man.
I know.
Now I'm starting to feel a little more skeptical.
Now I'm bummed.
This is depressing.
Another thing that I wondered about is Linda maybe having some suppressed trauma because she brings up being raped or attempted rape by Dan. And I don't know, there are some research articles that I found while I was researching of people that have sexual trauma and then have these like alien abduction stories. So
yeah,
I don't know, it's possible. Or sleep paralysis, because a lot of these things that she talks about happened when she was sleeping. With Richard and Dan, there is a lot of skepticism because, like I said, we've never seen these men. We've only heard them. So one of the theories is that because Linda was an actress, she knew people that would like do this for her. And maybe she like wrote a script and was like, hey, this is like for something. Like maybe she lied to them, or they were right. Like people that were her friends and were like, yeah, we'll help you with whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes actually so much more sense. I'm like slouching in my chair. I'm disappointed. But that makes so much more sense because she probably just has like an acting troupe.
Mm-hmm.
Or like just actor friends that she knows, like to your point, that she was just paying. Like she has a lot of money, right?
Yeah, I think so. Because if you're living in a 12th floor in Manhattan,
So she might be paying them off.
She also was like always very, very put together, immaculate makeup and nails and everything. So yeah, it seems that way. But people who are UFO enthusiasts sometimes point to Richard and Dan as being Men in Black.
So when you first brought them up, that's actually what I thought.
Yeah.
Because I thought they were Men in Black.
Yeah.
But Men in Black don't get this close.
Right? Yeah.
Like the traditional stories that I heard, they're always kind of aloof. They're very threatening in the background.
Way more subtle.
Yeah, and they never pretend to be, like, they always pretend, they always say they're, like, from the government. So why would they say they were cops and then from the government? And that's the other thing is when law enforcement officials pretend to be, like, other law enforcement, they always go up. They never demote themselves. Like, why would they say they were New York City cops
right.
and then that they were federal agents?
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't make sense. One thing that I just realized is... So there's this point, my understanding is Linda was like watching footage from some UN thing where there's like, it's both Richard and Dan or one of them is like in the background in this interview and she shows Bud, she's like, that's him, that's the guy who I saw. So I think to Bud, it was like, he saw this person. I really think that Bud was a victim in this.
Yeah.
I think that this was Linda concocting, and I don't think that he really thought that this was like, I think he trusted Linda so much, and it seems like this went on for years, and so
she's charismatic
in.
She's an actress,
very
and to Bud's point, she's attractive, and so that's, you probably just got sucked in.
Okay, so we are almost done, but I do want to bring up the fact that Linda, after this docuseries came out, she actually sued Netflix. She filed her complaint with the New York State Supreme Court just a few days before the docuseries was set to release. When speaking with Forbes magazine, Linda claimed the docuseries, quote, defames her, paints her in an unflattering light, and steals the work of an author who first wrote about her story more than 20 years ago. So in the complaint, Linda claims fraud, defamation, and breach of covenant of good faith and fair dealing. She also claims in the docuseries she was forced to read from a script that she felt falsely represented her and her story. She also claims she agreed to the show under false pretenses. She didn't know that Carol Rainey was going to be so significant in the docuseries, and she is, like, interviewed basically as much as Linda, and Carol obviously puts Linda under a lot of scrutiny. So basically, Linda's just pissed. You have to watch it.
I have to watch it now.
Maybe I'm remembering this wrong, but I think it's like 3 episodes. I watched it like a week or two ago. But yeah, she wasn't aware of how prominent her role was going to be. And so this is like the point where it's like, it seems like catfight. Like Carol and Linda hate each other.
Yeah, unsurprisingly.
Yeah. Linda also claims that the letter Carol Rainey gave to filmmakers was forged. I don't know what letter she's referring to, but there's like a letter. I think it's the one where she's like, this signature's fake, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
My understanding is Carol's claiming Linda wrote the letter and Linda's claiming she didn't. And Carol created that to try to make me look bad, blah, blah, blah. Linda describes Carol Rainey as a, quote, embittered alcoholic ex-wife hell-bent on revenge against her husband.
Oh, my God.
Obviously, considering the documentary is out and available to view, it is very clear that the judge did not grant Linda's request. So, aftermath, Bud Hopkins died in 2011. Carol Rainey also died more recently in 2023 of natural causes. And according to the lawsuit, Linda lives in Tennessee now.
More appropriate for this story.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. She ended up where she belonged. I'm happy for you, Linda.
It's crazy that she brought a lawsuit. Like, it's right? She's either crazy or telling the truth. Because you get discovery in a lawsuit. Like, Carol could have asked any number of questions, Carol's lawyer, and it would have been perjury if she lied. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. At the end of the docuseries, Carol Rainey says, quote, "Linda was the most complex hoax I have ever seen. But that does not make this whole phenomenon all a lie. You would have to be silly not to know that there are other things that are out there in this unbelievably dense universe that we're only beginning to see right now." End quote. So I think that ends things on a bit of a lighter note.
Yeah.
You know. So was this one of the most historical alien abductions of all time? Was it an elaborate hoax? Did Linda and Hopkins plant a seed into dozens of people's heads? Whatever the case, Linda Napolitano's experience is certainly perplexing.
This is a goddamn roller coaster. Wow.
That is the story of Linda Napolitano and the Manhattan alien abduction, sometimes called the Brooklyn Bridge abduction.
See, that sounds more like an alien abduction story. When you say the Manhattan abduction, it's like two gangsters kidnap like somebody's rich son.
I'm going to Google really quick to make sure that is the name of that docuseries, because okay. I could be wrong. But yeah, what do you think?
I love this. I really love this story because it's kind of my favorite kind of like supernatural story where you don't really know how much of it is true and how much of it isn't. To have so many witnesses that Bud did actually talk to.
Yeah.
Like, you might be a convincing actor, but are you convincing enough to answer questions off the top of your head? Because there's no way Linda could have foreseen what the questions were going to be. So, okay, maybe some of these people were confused or whatever, but every single one of them, like, my thought is something crazy happened. It may not have been what Linda said. But Linda wanted to add some legitimacy to her story, so she produced extra witnesses, maybe, who knows?
Right.
But, I mean, for what was it, three people? Well, the two cops probably made up guys, but the other two people, I don't know.
Right.
I think it's reasonable. And they came out after the story?
Mm-hmm.
This is crazy.
Around 2 years. Yeah, so Richard and Dan, I think, were fake, but...
Yeah, I agree.
So that would leave 21 witnesses outside of that, and my understanding is there's audio and video of all of them, and they show a lot of them in the docuseries, and they seem just very normal. They're like,
yeah,
this is where it happened, and this, like, it's just very matter of fact. It doesn't seem like they're like, and now, like,
yeah,
it's
right,
not,
right.
Yeah.
They're not trying to get their big break.
And I did check, it is just called the Manhattan Alien Abduction, so.
I love it.
Watch it, it's crazy.
I have to watch it. This is so crazy.
Sarge, tell us about all of your things.
So Dave and I, my co-host who is ill tonight and couldn't make it, Dave and I have a show called Cryptid Cocktail Party. He and I met on TikTok like 2 years ago now. I did a guest spot on his show. He invited me back to be the full-time host. But Dave does all the hard work. I'm just there to support his brilliant vision. He's actually an excellent script writer too. So I want to make sure I give him credit on that. But we have a lot of fun. It's an absurd amount of fun to do the show. We actually just met in person for the first time ever. So this whole time, these last 2 years, we've just been collaborating online. So if you want to follow us, we are at Cryptid Cocktail on Instagram. There's also in all my links. So you can follow me, you can follow Dave. But check us out on Instagram. You can find me at Sarge the Destroyer. I'm on Threads and TikTok, Instagram. I'm on Twitter, but don't follow me there. That place is a cesspool. And follow the show. Give us a listen. Dave puts up little video clips of us. So yeah, it's just a lot of fun. And we don't take it super seriously. We're not like complete, you know, wide-eyed believers. We approach things with a little skepticism. But like I said, sometimes you get a good story and you can't say no. You can't say it's completely impossible. So give us a listen.
Yeah, I think you guys would love their show. It's a similar vibe to mine. There's just more of a comedy element, but I think it's great. Like, I love the comedy element. It works. And if you guys want a specific recommendation, I really liked the CIA and Aswang PSYOP episode that y'all did with Scared All the Time. Really good.
It was such a great episode.
I was cracking up. It's really good.
Yeah, we've had a lot of great guests. Dave's got a lot of friends, a lot of good connections. So
yeah, love Chris and Ed. They've been on my show as well.
They're so great. Such good guys.
Very good guys. Well, thanks everybody. This has been great. Sarge, thanks again. This was awesome.
No problem. Anytime. This was a really good time.
Yeah, you'll have to come back with Dave.
Yeah, definitely. I'm going to drag him in here. I'm going to pump him full of vitamin C right before we record. So
perfect. Perfect. What a wild story. I've truly never heard an alien abduction like this. It's like a soap opera. And I just loved having Sarge. You guys have to go listen to Cryptid Cocktail Party. It's such a great show. They are so, so funny. They do a great job. And if you like my show, I would be very surprised if you don't like theirs. Go check them out. Links will be down in the show notes. If you enjoyed today's episode, I would love if you let me know. Drop a comment down below on YouTube, like this video. If you're listening on Spotify, you can also leave a comment on this exact episode, letting me know your thoughts. And if you haven't done so yet, I would love it so much if you leave a 5-star review wherever you can. On YouTube, you can subscribe. That is much appreciated and helps a lot. You all are amazing. I hope you have a great week. Please stay safe, and I will talk to you next week. Bye.
Bye. Bye, everyone.
Perplexity, a Mystery Podcast, is hosted, written, and produced by me, Kadra Brannon. This show is proud to be a part of the Black Cat Network. Assistant editor is Charlie Leopold. Assistant producer is TJ McRae. Theme song by Patrick Thompson. Music for this episode is from Pixabay. If you enjoyed today's episode, leave a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts. If you have a story to share or a topic request, email perplexitymysterypodcast@gmail.com. Contact, support, and merch links can be found in the episode description. And you can always unlock early and ad-free episodes and exclusive bonus content by joining the Perplexed Society at patreon.com/perplexitymysterypodcast. Until next week, stay curious.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21+. Terms and conditions apply.